In the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer.
Amen.
Amen.
Please be seated. For the last couple of weeks or so, a few of us here at St. Michael's that try to keep track of our property as much as we can, a few of us have been engaged in the annual liturgical ritual of determining the snowplowing contract. Now, the snowplowing contract creates more mysteries than exist in the Christian faith, I'm convinced. And you wouldn't think on the surface, how can such simplicities of something as simple as the snowplowing contract take so much time? Well, it does take time. In a funny kind of way that relates to a lot of what the gospel has to say this morning. We begin, of course, by looking at last year's contract and how much it costs for all of the various possibilities, how much salting and plowing and shoveling, what that will fit into the current year. We actually go to the Oracle, the National Weather Service, and they can tell us for this year that there's a 50-50 chance of temperatures being warmer than last year, but a 50-50 chance of the precipitation being also higher, and it's La Nina and El Nino, and I'm sure the abuelo is in there somewhere as well. So we have all that to kind of cook on. And to be honest, and we'll talk more about this in the sermon, but climate change has made the snow removal business a challenge. Because, from their perspective, they have to have equipment, they have to have salt, they have to have crew, and they prepare all this, and it rains all winter, then they lose. But on the other hand, if we agree to a fixed rate, and then we get, you know, snowfall after snowfall after snowfall, they will lose out. So after we talked about all this and thinking, and was it at 70, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday? So, you know, we're like trying to... Is it really ever going to snow? I know it's November. So we finally thought to ourselves, well, there are two things that we can probably rest our hats on. It will get colder, and it will snow. So maybe we should sign on the dotted line. The signs around us, warm as it was, however, was beginning to tell us that something was going to happen, a change. Apocalypticism is essentially that, looking at signs and figuring out what signs mean. So to put it in a complete kind of twist of biblical thinking, creationism, just imagine for a moment that God has started over and created the Garden of Eden in Michigan. Well, that's not too far off. I mean, you know, Michigan's a nice place. So, Michigan is the Garden of Eden. It's just been created. God has populated it right off the bat with everybody, put everything in the book of Genesis has come to pass, and moreover, it's all been set up and it started in the month of July. Now, July in Michigan, I think, is pretty beautiful. I mean, this past July was gorgeous. You know, it was really nice. Beautiful, beautiful weather. So God's first people are here in Michigan in July, and boy, they're loving it. It's green, everything's growing, there's the farmers' markets, and there's places to go, and there's swimming and everything. But then all of a sudden the days grow shorter, and the air starts to become cooler, and the grass turns brown, and the leaves start fluttering to the ground and throwing a lunar eclipse or something else. And if you were first people, who had never been through a winter before, you would think, something's going to happen. And it probably isn't good. What is going to happen? What are the signs? What is God trying to tell us in signs? So the reading of signs, the meaning-making that we look for in what happens around us, is a key to understanding what I just mentioned, which is apocalypticism. Or apocalyptic writing. That's what we hear in the gospel this morning, the prediction that the temple, one of the world's largest religious structures ever built, will one day not exist, that it could be destroyed. apocalypticism. It actually means revealed or uncovered or disclosed gradually. That's the Greek word. It's come to the English usage about the 17th century in connection with the revelation of St. John. But I think in more modern thought, apocalypticism has come to mean kind of a sense of catastrophic destruction, the end of the world by some physical or geological action of amazing proportions. That focus has raised a lot of money for movie makers and written a lot of books and caused a lot of kerfuffle. That's not the real meaning. Oh, there's something very appealing about the idea that the world's just all going to end, but the hero at the end of 2 hours of the movies is going to pull it off and say, Armageddon, we can change that asteroid, we can do this to save the planet, and then everyone lives happily ever after. That's the popular kind of apocalypticism. But that focus is misplaced because it removes our responsibility for seeing God in and through the signs around us. The signs of things happening, of what might happen or could happen if we notice them. The signs that serve as warnings that our human agency is needed. God calling us to act even before we clearly understand what might happen in the future, or even especially if we don't recognize the consequences of not responding or acting. In other words, it answers the theological question, what is God trying to tell us? Through signs, through hints, through what we see around us. So getting back to that snowblowing contract, if we don't act and if we don't have one, then, well, we'll have a snowbound, ice-clogged parking lot. You can either toboggan to church or skate to church, but you won't have to drive because you won't be able to park in the parking lot. So we read the signs to do something about what we know is going to happen. Bishop Nathaniel Wright, the Anglican theologian who has written wonderfully about complicated theological concepts and put them into really understandable terms, he has written this about the subject. The word apocalyptic and others like it have become slippery in the last few decades. But in common with other scholars, I use the word apocalyptic itself to refer first to a way of writing, what you might call literary convention. Some writers choose to evoke the cosmic or theological meaning of events in the time or world by means of a sometimes complex system of metaphors. For example, the prophet Isaiah writes, "The stars will not give their light, the sun will be dark at its rising, and the moon will not shed its light." What was going on, we might wonder, to make Isaiah write that? The nation of Babylon had been destroyed, and it was never to be rebuilt. So in the prophet's world, that was like saying that London or New York would just sink into the sea, never to rise. And if we wrote about that, it would get your attention. What language do we borrow to do justice to such a cosmic event? The whole point, of course, is that the world has not actually collapsed. If it had, there would be no one to tell us about Babylon. But the very thought of it brings us all to mind. Apocalyptic thoughts take shape in this kind of language. It's the use of vivid metaphors which enable the writer to say, and hopefully the reader to understand, the significance within God's dimension of timeless reality, of events that happen within our time-bound dimension, within the world of space, time, and matter. In other words, God has the long view of history. We have the short term. So as I mentioned earlier, climate change is affecting our snow plowing contracts, as well as precipitation in general and much else. It has the potential to create apocalyptic changes in our weather, in our precipitation, our agriculture, our very existence. The very predictions that are made in themselves are apocalyptic forecasts, and this is part of the challenge. So much temperature change by so many degrees over so many decades, you see. It might go up 1 degree or 2 degrees or 3 degrees, and that might be 2050 or 2075 or 2080. Increase in sea level gap, varying amounts, again, over time and over decades. What does it all mean to us? Can we make sense of it? Estimations of what might happen in the future, even as some measurable changes begin now, lead to a kind of apocalyptic thinking, or what I might call apocalyptic paralysis. It will be another generation's problem. We can't do anything about climate change, so why bother? We can't sustain the economic impact. It's going to happen anyway, so why not just keep going as long as we can? That's that paralysis piece. It's going to snow anyway, so why worry about the parking lot? Would be a local response. Mayor Curley of Boston, James Michael Curley, the first Roman Catholic mayor of Boston, and quite the character, to put it mildly, was the only mayor to be elected while serving a prison term for postal fraud. Boston's an interesting town, by the way. He had diverted money from the snowplowing fund to pay off some personal debts, shall we say? Now, well, it snowed a lot. And 3 days later, the streets were not plowed, and the response was, God put it there, God will take it away. Well, we do have signs about climate change, and we have God-given powers of observation and measurement, and we have the empirical evidence of science and record-keeping and data, all of which, despite changes and differences of opinion, all of which tell us that the climate is changing rapidly, and we have time now to do something about it. It is for us, I think, an abiding fear and concern that nuclear war was when I was growing up. That sense that something could happen, and it would happen without little warning, and it would be very destructive. And now I think that's lapsed, although very much still a concern. Climate change has that same way of getting into our thinking. But we can do something about it if we read the signs. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, Jesus says. The end will not come immediately. This will give you an opportunity. I will give you words and wisdom that no one will be able to contradict. The signs that God gives us provides opportunity to act. Whether it's determining the future of a parish church or the direction of our country, or climate change, or any of the great challenges that face us locally and globally, God has given us time and the wisdom and the words that cannot be contradicted and the power to act. As Wright put it so wisely, apocalyptic writing gives us warning from God's perspective of eternity about events that could happen to us in our time on earth. And in that warning comes the chance to act, to make change, to work with God as God's agents in doing what is right and consonant with God's will. So as Jesus said, do not fear. Can you see the signs around you? What more then could we ask? As Jesus told his followers and reminds us again and again and again, by our endurance, we will gain our soul. In the name of God, Creator and Redeemer and Sustainer. Amen. Amen.